Chapter 20. The road was just wide enough for the two of us to walk side by side. The grass on either side was as high as an elephant's eye. We could see blue sky above us and exactly as far along the path as the next curve, which could have been any distance away, because there's no perspective in an unbroken green trench. We'd been traveling on this road most of the day and passed only one old man and a couple of cows. But now we could hear what sounded like a large party approaching us, not far off, perhaps 200 yards away. There were men's voices, a lot of them, footsteps, some dissonant metal drums, and most disturbing, the continuous screams of a woman, either in pain or terrified or both. "Young masters," came a voice from somewhere near us. I jumped in the air and came down in a defensive stance, my black glass knife drawn and ready. Josh looked around for the source of the voice. The screaming was getting closer. There was a rustling in the grass a few feet away from the road. Then again the voice, "Young masters, you must hide." An impossibly thin male face, with eyes that seemed a size and a half too large for his skull, popped out of the wall of grass beside us. "You must come. Kali comes to choose her victims. Come now or die." The face disappeared, replaced by a craggy brown hand that motioned for us to follow into the grass. The woman's scream hit crescendo and failed, as if the voice had broken like an over-tightened lute string. "Go," said Joshua, pushing me into the grass. As soon as I was off the road, someone caught my wrist and started dragging me through the sea of grass. Joshua latched onto the tail of my shirt and allowed himself to be dragged along. As we ran, the grass whipped and slashed at us. I could feel blood welling up on my face and arms, even as the brown wraith pulled me deeper into the sea of green. Above the rasping of my breath, I heard men shouting from behind us, then a thrashing of the grass being trampled. "They follow," said the brown wraith over his shoulder. "Run, unless you want your heads to decorate Kali's altar. Run!" Over my shoulder to Josh, I said, "He says run, or it will be bad." Behind Josh, outlined against the sky, I saw long, sword-like spear tips, the sort of thing one might use for beheading someone. "Okie dokie," said Josh. It had taken us over a month to get to India, most of the journey through hundreds of miles of the highest, most rugged country we had ever seen. Amazingly enough, there were villages scattered all through the mountains, and when the villagers saw our orange robes, doors were flung wide and larders opened. We were always fed, given a warm place to sleep, and welcome to stay as long as we wished. We offered obtuse parables and irritating chants in return, as was the tradition. It wasn't until we came out of the mountains onto a brutally hot and humid grassland that we found our mode of dress was drawing more disdain than welcome. One man, of obvious wealth, he rode a horse and wore silk robes, cursed us as we passed and spit at us. Other people on foot began to take notice of us as well, and we hurried off into some high grass and changed out of our robes. I tucked the glass dagger that Joy had given me into my sash. "What was he going on about?" I asked Joshua. "He said something about tellers of false prophecies, pretenders, enemies of the Brahmin, whatever that is. I'm not sure what else." "Well, it looks like we're more welcome here as Jews than as Buddhists." "For now," said Joshua, "all the people have those marks on their foreheads like Gaspar had. I think without one of those, we're going to have to be careful." As we traveled into the lowlands, the air felt as thick as warm cream, and we could feel the weight of it in our lungs after so many years in the mountains. We passed into the valley of a wide, muddy river, and the road became choked with people passing in and out of a city of wooden shacks and stone altars. There were humpback cattle everywhere, even grazing in the gardens, but no one seemed to bear them any mind. "The last meat I ate was what was left of our camels," I said. "Let's find a booth and buy some beef." There were merchants along the road selling various wares, clay pots, powders, herbs, spices, copper, and bronze blades. Iron seemed to be in short supply. and tiny carvings of what seemed to be 1,000 different gods, most of them having more limbs than seemed necessary, and none of them looking particularly friendly. We found grain, breads, fruits, vegetables, and bean pastes for sale, but nowhere did we see any meat. We settled on some bread and spicy bean paste, paid the woman with Roman copper coin, then found a place under a large banyan tree where we could sit and look at the river while we ate. I'd forgotten the smell of a city, the fetid melange of people and waste and smoke and animals, and I began to long for the clean air of the mountains. "I don't want to sleep here, Joshua. Let's see if we can find a place in the country. We are supposed to follow this river to the sea to reach Tamil. Where the river goes, so go the people." The river, wider than any in Israel, but shallow, yellow with clay, and still against the heavy air, seemed more like a huge, stagnant puddle than a living, moving thing. In this season, anyway. Dotting the surface, a half dozen skinny, naked men with wild white hair and not 3 teeth apiece shouted angry poetry at the top of their lungs and tossed water into glittering crests over their heads. "I wonder how my cousin John is doing," said Josh. All along the muddy riverbank, women washed clothes and babies, only steps from where cattle waded and shat. Men fished or pushed long, shallow boats along with poles, and children swam or played in the mud. Here and there, the corpse of a dog bobbed fly-blown in the gentle current. "Maybe there's a road inland a little, away from the stench." Joshua nodded and climbed to his feet. "There," he said, pointing to a narrow path that began on the opposite bank of the river and disappeared into some tall grass. "We'll have to cross," I said. "Be nice if we could find a boat to take us," said Josh. "You don't think we should ask where the path leads?" "No," said Joshua, looking at a crowd of people who were gathering nearby and staring at us. "These people all look hostile." "What was that you told Gaspar about love was a state you dwell in or something?" "Yeah, but not with these people. These people are creepy. Let's go."